Here we're sitting with Kosto Kostiulis and Thomas Herrenstam. They're the creators of Mutant Year Zero or Null. And we're at the Sci-Fi Book Handel in Stockholm. And they just did a demonstration day and signing a lot of autographs for the game. People buying the game today. A lot
of fans and groupies.
A lot of activity today, which I thought was really great. We just wanted to sit down and talk to you a little bit about the game and also the role of meeting the public in situations like this. I think is interesting. How does that create a community, and you get to meet different people that you probably wouldn't. And same with me. I was really happy. I was able to create a character, and we went through a kind of a mini scenario, and I thought it was a lot of fun.
Mutant or Null or Mutant Year Zero is a post-apocalyptic game, role-playing game. It's the latest version of a very classic Swedish RPG. It's one of from the early 80s. This is actually a 30-year anniversary. The first version of Mutant came out in 1984 during the Cold War. And there have been several versions since. The one before this one came out in 2002, first version. So it's a bit over 10 years ago now, and we thought it was about time for a new version. This game is we focused very heavily on the post-apocalyptic theme, more than in previous versions of Mutant, which have been sort of set in a more sort of 18th 19th century type post-apocalyptic world, but quite civilized. This one is a prequel to that game, so this is more of a less civilized world. The point of it all is there's a lot of focus in the game on resources, food, water. Every bullet counts, and the point of the game is really to sort of start the new civilization after the big disaster, after the apocalypse. I guess that's in short. Sure, we really love games, role-playing games that are like games and not just like books. So this is a boxed game with a lot of stuff in it, like and you can use there are like playing chips and playing cards for mutations and things like that. A lot of bits and parts in the game that we really think contribute to the overall gaming experience.
For me, it felt almost a hybrid between a board game and a role-playing game, because you have this large map in front of you, the dice, and I really like that with the cards, and it, for me, it felt very interactive, like very physically interactive with what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's I really like having these kinds of things. I think they make the game more fun. I know there are, we do respect the other opinion among role players. There are those that feel that you really should only have like pen, paper, and dice and nothing else. I don't personally feel that way, but I can understand that position. So therefore, these tokens and things are actually not necessary to play the game. There are charts in the books. You can roll dice instead of drawing a playing card, for instance. But I really feel this. These things make it more fun, and especially when you're sort of exploring the zone, which is a big part of the game. Not the whole game, but it's a big part. The map is a grid map, and you sort of explore it one grid at a time. So, yeah, and when you play that, it can be kind of board gamey, which I think is fun. But you can also, if you want to, stay in one sector, one grid, on the map for a very long time and just role play. So it is a role playing game, but it does certainly have board game elements in it.
It's similar to old school Renaissance games that you have hex crawling. So yeah. We just use squares instead.
It's
that's
like
the only difference.
Yeah.
Grid crawling.
How do you feel about the role-playing culture in Sweden? I'm assuming both of you have grown up playing a lot of role-playing games. And do you feel that it's a very strong role-playing culture here that's, you know, very prominent? Or do you think it's more likely that it's very kind of inclusive to only a certain kind of type of people and a certain kind of subculture?
Yeah. I think it's hard to compare to other countries. I don't know exactly. I mean, I know in the US it's a big thing, but I mean, compared to the size of the country, I think the community for role-playing games is quite strong in Sweden. It has been traditionally very strong. I mean, in the 80s, everyone or not everyone, but there were, in every class in school, a couple of people play role-playing games. It was a role-playing game in every family, almost. It was very common back in the 80s. Today, it's not as common. It's more of a niche thing now, of course, but I do think those traditions still are there, which means the community is still quite strong. And I'm sort of, because the sort of the death of role-playing games has been sort of announced a couple of times during the years, and it's still sort of keeps coming back. So I don't think it's we're going to see that death anytime soon. And it really is, I think, confirmed by being here today. There's been quite a few people here, and even maybe more. That we were like last weekend on GothCon, which is the big gaming convention for board games and role-playing games in Sweden, in Gothenburg. And there it was just actually kind of crazy. We were there for 2 days, and we did not get, there was not a quiet moment at our table for those entire 2 days. I was completely exhausted afterwards, actually.
Can you expand further maybe on the role of meeting the public as creators, game designers?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, of course, sometimes people don't love everything you do in a game. They might not agree with every design decision, and sometimes you get into a very engaged and sometimes very long and detailed discussions on these things, but really the overall impression is just that it's a lot of fun, because you walk away from that with a lot more energy, and you just feel that, you know, it was worth, because obviously we're not making a lot of money on this. We're not actually not really making money at all. So this kind of these meeting people who love the games, play the games, is really that is what why you're doing it, because that's the only pay you get is people enjoying the game, really.
And you also meet people over the internet, on the forums, and since it's a small community, you have a discussion between designers and users all the time.
Yeah.
Much more than if you would be writing a book, you would just get feedback when you're finished. Here you have discussions from the start of design and to the end.
Yeah.
That's
and because the interest, I think, especially for this game compared to others, is large. It's now I'm having trouble for the first time really to keep up with the forum discussions on our forum, because I just don't have time to read everything and answer, even though there are like things I would like. I try to stay engaged on the forums and answer things, but now it's really been hard to keep up. But generally, I think still the size is so of the communities is manageable enough that you can actually stay engaged and have like in discussions as the designer with directly with a lot of people playing the game, which is fantastic. I mean, it's not just like a company creates a game and then there's like the forum is really on its own. Like in a lot of the computer game industry, maybe the forums are sometimes. I mean, the designers are not always very present there. I think we can always be very present and have a very active discussion with the players, which is great.
In a situation like this, where you actually have a finished, published product, you mentioned that some people might not agree with some things and might not care for some things. Have you had the situation come up either here or at GothCon where, you know, you have a finished product, but people are still going, oh, you know what you guys should do instead? You should do this, as if making suggestions for your finished product, which is in front of them.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, that happens.
You should do, yeah, sure. I mean, or suggestions for what we should do in the sort of next expansion or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's, you just sort of, yeah, I mean, that's their opinion, and we might be something that we just cannot do or don't want to do. I mean, we can't agree with everything, but we do try to listen, because we get a lot of good ideas from people on the like on the forums and even when meeting people out on events like this for ideas for new expansions, for things like that. But of course, it's very hard to change this particular product. It's kind of done now.
It's
so
too late now.
Too late now. Yeah.
But one thing I noticed when setting up a character and playing the game is that a lot of the instructions for creating a character were suggestions.
Yeah.
So I think this game seems to have kind of inherently woven into its own fabric that you can actually take these as suggestions, but then if you disagree with something, you can change it.
For sure, because that's, I think that's the defining trait of role players, is that everyone basically changes every game. It's very rare that someone actually plays the game as it's written. It hardly ever happens. No. And I think trying to fight that would just be stupid and counterproductive in every way. So instead, we try to encourage that kind of thinking and also make the game, the system, fairly easy to adapt and change if you want. And really to encourage people to add their own stuff, change things a little bit. And the whole system, the whole campaign really is built, like you mentioned, the characters. When you make characters, you get like concrete suggestions for basically everything, from names to looks to relations to NPCs to everything. You can choose if you want to, if you don't have any great idea yourself, or if you're pressed for time, you can just pick one. Or if you want to, there is always the choice to make your own decision and choose your own thing. And really, that's the whole game is designed in that kind of sense, that you, as a game master, you have a big map and you have a lot of cool locations, but we don't say where on the map every location is. We kind of leave that open to the game master to sort of adapt the map and what's in there according to the playstyle or where they want to go. You can make sure that it's actually the cool stuff actually is where the players are going and not on the other end of the map. And you don't have to force the players to go here because that's where the cool stuff is. So we try to really adapt the game to the players, really.
Not only is it kind of adaptable to each playing group, it's very interactive with the other players. And so you build into your character your relationship to the other players and other characters, and also with the story itself is built directly with the characters. Like, for instance, I really hated my boss, and so I'm sure as a game master you were going to weave that into the story somehow, or each of us had goals that we were trying to accomplish. So I think for me that's more interesting than just having, I'm just trying to collect as much gold and experience points as I can. I actually have a goal, and it really went a long way for me to, in like 15 minutes, thinking about my character as like almost a real person.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I pretty much for a very long time enjoyed those kinds of games that I mean, I do enjoy a good dungeon crawl every once in a while. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But to get me really engaged in the game, I sort of need to have more to work with from the character standpoint and these kinds of things. We try to not make it, because there's a lot of games would have a lot of focus on that, and that can be great if you have. But what we want to avoid is to make it to say that, okay, now you have to write like a page of background story for your character. Go, and because people, some people love that and would do it anyway, and some people just don't really have any great ideas. Just want to get started playing. So what we try to do to accommodate really both styles is that you get these pre-made choices that you just choose your role, and then that role has a couple of example relations to NPCs and to other characters you can pick from if you want to, you have a dream or a goal that you can, like, three choices, pick this or one of the other two, or make up your own if you want to. So we try to sort of give concrete pre-made suggestions to pick from for those who want that. And also in these choices, there are the NPCs that are in there, they actually appear in several choices of these roles, which means that you sort of, once you've made the characters, you already have a cast of NPCs to work with, because that already have some kind of relation to the player characters, which is a lot of fun to work with, because then that boss character that your character hates, obviously, if we played a bit longer, I'd get him in there and make him, or her, I think it was a she, tell you to do something or mess with you in some way, and then you would automatically have a fun conflict to work with.
Yeah. Also in the game, you can change after a while. So it says in the rules that when you don't think this relationship is interesting, just change it. So that's happened in our games. We sort of had people or NPCs we hated and we got rid of, and you had to get new complications instead.
Things change, people die. Yeah. So this changes.
Great. So I think that was great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah.